Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. The United Nations Security Council and participants in UN-sponsored peace talks for Libya condemned an attack Tuesday at a hotel in Tripoli that killed at least 9 people. After 2 days of peace talks in Geneva, the UN mission in Libya said the attacks, such as the one on Tuesday, will not derail the process of working toward a unity government. Somalia's president today renewed an offer of amnesty to members of the militant group Al-Shabaab. President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud said that his government will ensure the safety of any Al-Shabaab members who acknowledge their crimes, reject the militant group, and embrace Somalia's peace and reconciliation process. In the comments released by his spokesman, the president also said his government will help defectors learn a trade or find a job. The comments follow the defection of an Al-Shabaab former intelligence chief and what the government says is a steady flow of foot soldiers abandoning the militants. People in the Nigerian state of Adamawa say their villages are being overrun by Boko Haram militants and that the government has failed to send troops to protect them. The Associated Press quotes fleeing residents as saying more than 40 people in 7 communities have been killed this week. The AFP News Service quotes a top mediator as saying a ceasefire has been signed between anti-Balaka rebels and ex-Seleka movement in the Central African Republic. Talks between the two sides were held in Kenya. The agreement will not go into effect until a formal signing takes place. Reuters reports 6 Bulgarians detained by Sudanese rebels after the helicopter in which they were flying made an emergency landing in South Kordofan province where combat was taking place. Reuters reports that the government of Madagascar is asking for international help following destruction from tropical storm Chedza earlier this month. The storm caused damage of about $40 million and displaced more than 100,000 people. A nighttime attack by pro-government militants has killed a number of people in Mali. The suicide bomb attack took place near the town of Tabankort. A Tuareg rebel group was said to be the target of the attack. A leading opposition figure in Tanzania was arrested today and charged with holding a political rally without a permit. Ibrahim Limpumla, the chairman of the Civil United Front, pleaded not guilty in a Dar es Salaam court. Tanzania is due to hold a referendum on a new constitution in April and a general election in October. Israeli defense forces say they have launched air and ground attacks into southern Lebanon in response to strikes launched by the militant Hezbollah group on the disputed Golan Heights. The United Nations confirms a peacekeeper, a Spanish soldier, was killed in southern Lebanon as the Israeli military and Hezbollah traded fire. 2 Israeli soldiers were also killed. Scott Bob has more.
Lebanon's militant Hezbollah group said in a statement that its forces targeted an Israeli military convoy in the Shaba Farms area of the Golan Heights, killing what it said was a number of troops. The Hezbollah statement indicated its strike was in response to an Israeli attack 10 days ago in Lebanon that killed 6 Hezbollah fighters and an Iranian general. Israel says the Shaba Farms area is part of the Golan Heights it seized from Syria in the 1967 war. Syria and Lebanon say the area is part of Lebanon. Scott Bob, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Jordan's information minister says his government is ready to trade a jailed terrorist suspect for a Jordanian pilot being held by Islamic State militants. Mohammed al-Momani made the announcement on state television today as a deadline for a possible execution of the hostages
approached.
The new Greek prime minister, Alexis Tsipras, says he wants to reach a fair, viable, and mutually beneficial solution with the international lenders as he begins to reverse the nation's austerity measures. Mr. Tsipras said today in Athens he is eager to avoid any destructive confrontations with Greece's creditors, but he said Greece could no longer blindly submit to the demands of the European Union. Briefly looking at markets, European markets are mixed and Asian Pacific markets closed mixed today. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
It's very important to keep in mind that we are not at the end of the current Ebola outbreak. However, in order to get there, there are certain gaps that need to be addressed, and we need to strengthen the focus on disease surveillance, which includes contact tracing, which is people who've been in contact with an Ebola-positive patient. They need to be registered, monitored, and to follow up.
That's Jens Patterson, PSF, MSF's humanitarian policy advisor. We'll have the latest updates on the Ebola outbreak in West Africa coming up. Also, the Ebola crisis in West Africa is high on the agenda of this year's African Union summit in Addis Ababa. The chief of intelligence for Al-Shabaab surrenders to the federal Somali government. And the UN Security Council and participants in UN-sponsored peace talks for Libya condemn an attack yesterday at a luxury hotel in Tripoli that killed at least 9 people. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Boko Haram militants now reported to be in control of 3 of the 4 roads to Maiduguri in possible preparation for a final attack on northeastern Nigeria's largest city. AP reports clashes between the militants and Nigerian military forces have occurred in and around the city for several days. It says that the Islamist forces are now engaged in fighting with Nigerian military to control the final access to the city, the road to Kano. Maiduguri is the capital of Adamawa State and has a population of 300,000. Also, attacks on 7 villages in the region were reported by state legislator Adamu Kamale. He said about 40 villagers have been killed. One villager who escaped said they requested military help, but no government troops responded. A woman fleeing the town of Mashika said Boko Haram has declared it is preparing a big grave for the refugees in Maiduguri and that there will be no mercy. An estimated 10,000 have died in the 5-year insurgency in Nigeria's north, and 1,500,000 have been displaced. The United Nations Security Council and participants in UN-sponsored peace talks for Libya condemned an attack yesterday at a luxury hotel in Tripoli that killed at least 9 people. One American citizen was identified among the dead, David Berry, who worked for a security company in Virginia. A Security Council statement urged all parties in Libya to take part in efforts to address the political and security crises facing the country, which has struggled for stability since the 2011 ouster of leader Muammar Gaddafi. After 2 days of elaborate and constructive peace talks in Geneva, the UN mission in Libya said that attacks like the one yesterday will not derail the process of working toward a unity government. Rather, they will create an incentive for all the Libyan sides to forge ahead. Zakaria Ismail Ahmed Hersi, the chief of intelligence for Al-Shabaab, has surrendered to the federal Somali government and denounced the militant group in a media address. He said the group misled the fighters into fighting a fake war and vowed to convince fighters to renounce violence and to also surrender to the Somali government. Zakaria was on the U.S. Most Wanted Global Terrorist list with a $3 million bounty on his head. Abdelaziz Billo reports from Mogadishu what this turn of events may mean for Somalia's battle against Al-Shabaab.
Authorities in Somalia have welcomed the defection of Zakaria Ismail Ahmed Hersi. Until his complete defection late last year, Zakaria, famously known as Zaki, served as the head of intelligence for the Somali-based militant group. Zaki was one of the 7 top Al-Shabaab officials of the Al-Qaeda-linked group with a $3 million bounty on his head. In an address to journalists in Mogadishu, Zaki denounced his former group and called on the other fighters to abandon the terrorist organization and join the Somali peace process. He says, I can confirm that as of today, I am no longer a member of Al-Shabaab, and I have renounced violence as a means of resolving conflict, and I will aim to achieve my goals towards peaceful means. And I also call and encourage all my friends to seek out a peaceful way of resolving all conflicts and towards reconciliation. The Somali government has offered pardon to any member of the terror group who surrenders and denounces violence. Mustaf Duhulo is Somalia's information minister and says whoever renounces violence will have an opportunity to integrate with society.
He says that the federal government of Somalia has consistently offered members of Al-Shabaab who have realized the error of their ways and who renounce violence the opportunity to reintegrate with Somali society and guarantees their safety. And as Zaki says, we can all resolve our differences through peaceful means. Zaki is the senior-most Al-Shabaab commander to surrender to the Mogadishu-based federal government after Hassan Dahir Awais, another top commander, and Said Atam, the head of Al-Shabaab in the Puntland region, who also surrendered in June 2014. The Somali government is slowly making progress in the war against Al-Shabaab. With support from African Union forces, Mogadishu now controls the vast south and central Somalia that was for a long time under Al-Shabaab's control. In September 2013, a U.S. drone strike killed the Al-Shabaab top leader Ahmed Abdi Gudane. Since then, its leaders have been divided, but Al-Shabaab has remained a strong fighting force and challenge to the Somali government. Abdulaziz Bilal for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Coming up on 12 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The humanitarian aid group Doctors Without Borders confirms reports of a downward trend of new Ebola cases in West Africa. However, the group, also known by the French acronym MSF, cautions that critical gaps remain in the hardest hit countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. I spoke with Jens Pedersen, MSF's humanitarian policy advisor, about the challenges that remain and what needs to be done.
Well, indeed, we've noted the decline in number of Ebola cases as well, and we're very pleased to see that. It's important to keep in mind that we've seen these dynamics of decreasing number of cases in previous outbreaks and then again later a rise. It's very important to keep in mind that we are not at the end of the current Ebola outbreak. However, in order to get there, there are certain gaps that need to be addressed. And we need to strengthen the focus on disease surveillance, which includes contact tracing, which is people who've been in contact with an Ebola positive patient. They need to be registered, monitored, and to follow up. We're still seeing issues of stigma, which are still preventing, and we're worried are preventing patients in coming forward. So there is a greater need for much more social mobilization as well in order to make sure that the number of decreasing cases actually will lead to a hold in the Ebola outbreak.
There are some hot spots that continue to persist in Sierra Leone. Why is this happening?
Well, there's many different explanations, both as to why the number of cases have gone down in some locations and in others that they have continued to rise. We're seeing number of cases increase in areas where there is not the same access to treatment, where there has not been the same community engagement. And we're seeing in some of the urban and western areas of Sierra Leone where, of course, the control of an outbreak in some of these environments where infrastructure is very poor is very difficult to address.
In Guinea, your people there on the ground have noted that new cases appear to be originating from areas that were previously regarded as Ebola-free. Is it the same thing that people still are not getting access that they need?
There is issues of particular concern in Guinea. One is that we have seen perhaps a stable number of cases, but we've seen a geographical spread in where the Ebola patients are presenting from. We've also seen a worrying trend, which is only a very small number of the patients that are presented to be Ebola positive at the facilities are actually on contact tracing lists, which means that they have been registered. Now, that's very concerning because it tells about the gap that there exists in the disease surveillance and monitoring system. So there are areas in Guinea which are of particular concern.
In Liberia, you all have noted that this is the country that has seen the sharpest decline in Ebola cases. However, their public health care system has taken a devastating blow from this Ebola crisis. So how is Liberia's public health care system recovering at this time?
Already, as you say, many of the affected countries, and Liberia in particular, had a rather weak public healthcare system. Now, the healthcare system has suffered tremendously from the Ebola outbreak. Many healthcare staff have been infected. The infrastructure in some of the facilities that have reopened are not necessarily adequate to ensure adequate protection of patients and staff for caring non-Ebola patients. There needs to be strengthened measures of infection control and prevention, for example, so you can be able to treat patients that are not having Ebola, but you can do it without having to fear that your patients have Ebola. So there's lots of systems and there's some steps that need to be taken. And of course, that's difficult on top of an already weakened healthcare system, in particular in Liberia.
You all have a rapid response team running mobile clinics there in Liberia. What kind of activity are you all performing at these clinics?
MSF, as we started the response, we have been very active in the construction and the management of Ebola patients. We've treated more than 5,000 Ebola patients in the past 9 months. Of course, as the outbreak changes, we're having to adapt from having larger facilities to treat Ebola-positive patients to react to the way the outbreak unfolds. And that means that we need and we have built the capacity and the ability to respond rapidly with smaller mobile clinics to areas where reports of cases are coming from. We investigate the cases, we sample the cases, and make sure that it's all done with the adequate protection for the patients, for the caretakers, and for the healthcare staff.
Do you think these three countries that have been affected very harshly by the Ebola crisis, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, at what point do you think that you all can say that you have reached zero cases of Ebola?
Very difficult to speculate as to when that will be. We all hope it will happen very soon. But as I said earlier, we've seen ups and downs in the number of cases. The main point now is that the most recent decrease in number of cases doesn't lead to complacency, but it leads to a strengthening of the measures and the parts of response, such as surveillance and monitoring of contact, that can ensure we reach to zero cases. But it requires further adjustment and it requires much more effort in order to reach there.
That was Jens Pedersen, MSF's humanitarian policy advisor. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The president of the World Bank has proposed insurance policies to protect against future epidemics such as Ebola. In a speech in Washington, Jim Yong Kim described a proposal being discussed with insurance companies, academics, the World Health Organization, and other UN agencies. Kim says the proposal involves a combination of bonds and insurance plans and would be similar to a homeowner's insurance policy or fire insurance. In other Ebola news, philanthropist Bill Gates today declared that nations must prepare for war against any future epidemic. In Berlin, Gates spoke to the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, or Gavi. He said the world must look for new technologies to combat future diseases. He also said he is concerned about a trend in Western nations not to receive vaccinations. Ebola crisis in West Africa is on high on the agenda of this year's African Union summit in Addis Ababa. Although there are increasing signs the outbreak is in decline, VOA's Gabe Joslow reports that African leaders remain focused on recovery efforts and erasing the stigma the virus has left on the continent.
Just walking in the front door of the African Union building is a blunt reminder that Ebola is on everyone's minds. Ahead of the metal detectors, health workers point thermometers at the heads of visiting delegates, observers, and journalists, monitoring for fever. Signs displayed throughout the well-polished corridors read, "Ebola is real." AU assembly members are due to discuss two reports related to the Ebola crisis during the summit. AU Commission Deputy Chairperson Erastus Mwensha told reporters the outbreak seems to be waning, but regional leaders want to be prepared for the next possible health crisis.
As lessons learned, part of our resolve is to put in place a mechanism for us to be prepared that when there is such an outbreak, we are ready to move quickly. And one of the discussions that is taking place during this summit is the need for us to have a center for disease control.
The World Health Organization said this month Ebola cases have declined sharply in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, the countries hardest hit by the outbreak, but warned nations to remain vigilant. Mwencha said affected countries paid economic and social costs as fear about the crisis drove down travel to and exports from the Ebola region.
There was the stigma part of it, which was a major challenge. There was some kind of embargo associated with this stigma because flights stopped going there, borders were closed, and those countries faced problems.
While African nations have pledged millions of dollars to aid the response and recovery to the Ebola crisis, an anti-poverty group called the One Campaign said many have yet to actually provide the money. Speaking on the sidelines of the summit, One Campaign executive director Sifo Moyo said the group is calling on African leaders to step up their assistance.
There remains a serious gap between the monies that have been pledged and the monies that have been delivered. To date, probably less than a handful of countries have actually met their commitments.
Moyo said countries including Ivory Coast, Kenya, Namibia, and Nigeria have all pledged money, but have so far failed to deliver. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Addis Ababa.
21 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, floods in southern Malawi have killed about 80 people so far and displaced more than 170,000 others. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says the floods have increased the risk of food insecurity in the region. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The FAO says about 250,000 family farm households have had their crops and livestock washed away. Florence Roll is the agency's representative in Lilongwe.
Very heavy rains started beginning of January in the south of the country, and the intensity of the rain has been extremely high.
Floods and droughts are common in Malawi, but this year's heavy rains came a bit early. They caused the Shire and Ruo rivers to burst their banks and flood large plains. Other areas have been affected differently by the heavy rains.
In many parts of the country, it has been flash flood where everything has gone in a day or less than a day. So the situation is quite devastating.
It's estimated more than 63,000 hectares of land are underwater in Malawi, about half of that cropland. A state of emergency has been declared in 15 of Malawi's 28 districts. The hardest-hit districts are Chikwawa and Sanje and Palombe. Flash flood warnings are now in effect for northern regions as well, because moderate to heavy rains are forecast there. The Malawi government has announced a $16 million plan to help farmers restore their fields. Rowe says the FAO will provide seeds and restore some of the livestock.
We are lucky in a sense because it's the beginning of the agriculture season. So we still have a very narrow window to replant. Of course, we will not be able to plant maize because it's going to be too late to harvest something in March or April. But we have other solutions like sweet potatoes, like cowpeas, like cassavas, etc., depending on the location.
She says more action will be taken after the floods recede.
Window of opportunity is using the residual moisture when the water recedes and then after irrigation as well. And for these two windows, there are more opportunities so we could replant. We could support farmers to replant maize, beans, vegetables, etc.
If all goes well, some crops could be harvested in June or July.
Otherwise, we'll be in a situation where all these affected people will not be able to plant until the next rain season, which is in November, December, and get food in March, April of next year.
The Food and Agriculture Organization says long-term watershed management infrastructure is urgently needed in Malawi. This includes not only better use of land and water resources to mitigate the effects of floods, but also improvements in livelihoods and poverty reduction. Torrential rains, including a tropical storm, have also caused flooding in parts of Mozambique, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, and Madagascar. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The Interparliamentary Union reports more than 300 members of parliament in 40 countries have been victims of widespread abuse, including death, torture, threats, arbitrary arrest, and detention. The IPU's Human Rights Committee has just completed a review of these cases and adopted 20 decisions involving 88 MPs in 15 countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IPU headquarters in Geneva.
Urgent cases regarding human rights violations against members of national parliaments occur in all regions of the world. Colombia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Sri Lanka are just a few of the countries that have outstanding caseloads going back many years. For the Interparliamentary Union, cases have no time limit. They remain on the organization's human rights docket until a settlement has been reached. IPU Human Rights Program Chief Roger Nuizenga tells VOA the committee is pleased Burundi finally has established a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The commission will examine the cases of a number of MPs killed during the country's civil war, which lasted from 1993 to 2005. He calls this a very important development.
We believe that this is an important opportunity for the Burundians to reconcile, but also to promote justice, because the committee believes that that's very much needed. We believe that with the establishment of this Truth and Reconciliation Commission, we can also finally find out what happened, how these assassinations were carried out, who did them, and also to, in addition to shedding light on how this happened, also establish some accountability.
During the meeting, the IPU committee was confronted with a new case in Niger involving former Parliament Speaker Hama Amadou, who is accused of being complicit in his wife's purchase of a baby. He says 28 other people, including senior politicians and some of their wives, also are accused of involvement in a baby trafficking network in West Africa.
While, of course, the IPU and the committee doesn't take a stance on the substance of the accusations, it has looked, however, at the parliamentary procedure which has been followed, because this does concern, after all, the Speaker of the National Assembly, and there were quite a number of issues and concerns that the committee has expressed. In addition to that, because as he is now, his arrest has now been authorized, the committee has decided to closely follow the proceedings, including through the dispatch of a trial observer.
Amadou is a key opposition leader who has had a falling out with Niger's president. Nuizenga notes opposition parliamentarians worldwide are often subject to serious abuse. Other highlights include the cases of 14 Venezuelan MPs stripped of parliamentary immunity. The committee also expressed deep concern over developments in Malaysia, where a lawyer defending opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim is facing sedition charges. The Interparliamentary Union also is calling for greater protection for Afghan woman MP and human rights advocate Fawzia Koofi, who survived a 2010 assassination attempt and has been the target of many death threats since then. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Did you know that more than 1.6 million people acquired HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, in recent years? More than half of those infected were under 24, and most of them were young girls. You can protect yourself from HIV. If you're a man, use a condom every time you have sex. If you're a woman, insist that your partner use a condom. And whether you're a man or a woman, talk to your health provider about an HIV test.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.